We start today's program with a conversation about mental illness and depression in the wake of the suspected suicide of actor and comedian Robin Williams. How can we help friends who are going through bouts of depression? When do we talk to them? When should we leave them alone? To discuss those questions and others, I'm joined by Jim Dunn, Executive Director of Arizona's chapter of the National Alliance on Mental Illness. Jim, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And by phone from Fort Bragg, California, S.E. Smith, Social Justice Editor at exojane.com. S.E., good morning to you.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you with us. Now, S.E., let me start with you. You wrote this week that you know people want those they care about to get help, talk to someone if they're in an especially tough place. Is there a best thing a friend can do? Does the situation have to dictate that?
One of the things I covered in my piece for Exo Jane is that in the reaction to celebrity suicides, people tend to think about mental health crises more than the need for ongoing support of the mentally ill community. And the real takeaway I want people to have from this news is that it's time to start breaking down mental health stigma and to create a world where people never reach the point where they're in crisis in the first place.
Jim, how do we get to that level?
I don't know, but I really thank SE for that well-written article. I think it was very well done, and I was kind of disappointed to see some of the conversations on the thread that followed. It just seems to get so vitriolic so quickly. But, you know, it takes a relationship, and that's, I think, what SE had pointed out. You know, it's just as simple as a relationship. Every family has conflict, but you don't quit each other.
SE, I guess when we talk about getting to a point where I don't want to say people are more accepting of it, but realizing that these are not just major events that the news is going to cover for a few days, are there certain steps you'd advise us all to take? Should we try to recognize what's going on? Again, as I ask, I sort of feel like, when do we back off, and when do people who are going through a mental health episode feel like they're being smothered by the help?
One of the biggest takeaways I think that people should definitely think about is kind of in their daily interactions, being aware that mentally ill people are probably all around them, even if they're not aware of that. And it's important to be sensitive about how they talk about mental illness and how they address people, not necessarily to assume that someone is not mentally ill. And when you see someone in crisis, not to say, oh, you should go get help, but rather to say, I'm here for you, I'm listening, I want you to know that I support you. Can I help you make an appointment with a therapist? And to be supportive and say, I want you to know you are valued. I want you to know you're making concrete contributions to my life or to the world. So it becomes less a pressure of you need to do something and you need to fix yourself, and more of a discussion about how someone is valued as a human being.
That's very well put. And, you know, one of the reasons people disconnect is they start to feel like they are more than a burden, than an asset to society or their loved ones. And they don't really have or feel like they have meaning and purpose in their life. So keeping connected and giving them opportunity to stay engaged is really important.
Jim, briefly, the Robin Williams situation has highlighted mental illness or depression, and yet has it highlighted it in such a way that seems like a lot of hype? And does it actually make it more difficult to make this, I don't want to say an easier conversation, but a conversation that people can have and feel more comfortable with? Because in some ways it feels like when someone famous does it, it almost blows things out of proportion to some extent. It's almost like, well, everyone is like Robin Williams now, or no one is like Robin Williams.
Well, and I think that was one of Essie's points as well. You're kind of conflicted. You know, you don't want to be a talking head that here's an opportunity to get in the media and, you know, spread your message. This is something that, you know, we do every day. But you also, you know, it raises awareness to a lot of people. People get scared. People react. And we want people to know that it's not a scary, terrible thing, that people live very full and satisfying lives. And, you know, treatment works and early intervention works. And it's just a matter of keeping connected.
S.E., what about awareness? To some of us, it seems almost impossible that we wouldn't have known a loved one, a close friend, a relative who's had some sort of mental health challenges. So, I mean, is awareness really at the core of what we need to find out first and then go from there?
One of the things that people need to be aware of is that when someone is mentally ill or when someone does make the decision to take their own life, that's not on you as a person in their life. It's not your responsibility. You didn't do something wrong. You didn't fail that person in some way. a lot of people with mental illness hide their symptoms because they feel like they need to, or they're afraid, or they're concerned about the very real implications of stigma. For example, you have people who would lose their jobs if they came out as mentally ill or sought treatment. And so it's important to kind of have an ongoing sensitivity to things like mood changes, people behaving a little differently. You know, if you have a friend who's normally very outgoing and tends to accept social invitations and host events, who suddenly starts to shut down, that's the time where you kind of check in with them and go, hey, what's going on? Is there something I can do to help out? You know, other people have dealt with troubles like this. Do you want help connecting you with those people?
I just agree. That was well put. It's hard to even add to that.
It's Here and Now on KJZZ. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix with Jim Dunn, Executive Director of Arizona's chapter of the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and S.E. Smith, Social Justice Editor at exojane.com. S.E. is with us from Fort Bragg, California. S.E., let me come to you on this. I wonder, without jumping in too much and making this too big, I'm curious as to whether you think society as a whole is too judgmental. Maybe I'll phrase it this way, unintentionally demanding, even when you talk about, well, make sure you get on your meds. I think you need assistance right now. Is there that feeling that even when people are trying to help, it might sound like they're not?
Yes, definitely. There's kind of a pressure that a lot of mentally ill people experience that the people around them expect them to fix themselves and just want them to get better. And I think even well-meaning people don't realize that the message that people who are struggling can internalize is, you're really a burden and you're causing all these problems, and why can't you just get better? What's your problem?
Jim, have you found that experience as well?
Well, and you know, I'm sorry, just to kind of back up on, you know, one of the things I think that Essie made important in that article is we need to knock down the stigma. And it, you know, a lot of times people in professional positions don't want to reveal that they've had a challenge. So I just wanted to make sure folks know that I myself have had a lived experience as well. And we fight hard to try to knock that stigma down every day.
Well, and follow up on what S.E. just said as well about this idea of whether people are judgmental even if they don't mean to be. Have you found that as well?
You know, I don't know that it's any more so than any other relationship. You know, sometimes when people aren't familiar with something, it might be scary. They might be reacting on what they know. But if you take the time to, you know, just try to get to know each other, you can break those walls down.
Jim, how difficult is it, and S.E., please jump in on this as well, how difficult is it to explain to a non-depressed person what depression feels like?
You know, I don't even know that you can do that. You know, it's just hard for people to really feel or understand, you know, what somebody else is going through. I mean, every experience is unique, and somebody might experience one event as traumatic and somebody else might not think it's a big deal. And S.E., please chime in.
I definitely agree with Jim. And, you know, I would also say it's kind of like trying to explain color to someone who is colorblind. You can try to articulate what it's like, but they have this sort of limited, muted lens through which they're viewing something. So when you talk about depression, a lot of people will say, oh, well, you know, I've been sad before. And you say, I totally acknowledge that, and I know that was a difficult experience for you, but this is different. And depression takes a lot of forms, but it's this pit, this black hole that you really don't know until you've been inside it.
And a lot of time it's more of a can you look at functional limitations, and it becomes hard to get out of bed. It's hard to answer the phone. You don't want to answer the door. Fear and foreboding, and you just kind of feel worse and worse every day.
Jim, with the work you've done, and I know it varies, as we said, from person to person. A person can deal with an episode in a different way. It can affect them completely differently. What are some advances you've seen that are encouraging to you? Are there certain medicines that are working well? Are there certain therapies that are working well?
You know, they've actually made great strides in medications, but, you know, there's always side effects in almost in every treatment intervention. You know, one of the biggest advances have been in peer support, and Arizona, believe it or not, has been on cutting edge since 98, early 2000s, on bringing individuals with lived experience, kind of training them how to use that experience to help other individuals kind of navigate a system of care. And we've worked with people straight out of an urgent crisis care center 1 week and go through a 6-week peer support training program and go out and run wellness groups for 30 other people a month later. It's amazing.
But what advances does Arizona need to make? What advances does Congress need to make or someone in order to make mental health care more accessible and make it better?
They just need to do a relationship, you know, walk the talk. You know, we know it's a relationship model. We've got great legislation in Congress on both sides of the parties. You know, some things nobody agrees on, some things make sense. Let's move forward on the things that make sense. But, if we're going to believe that individuals can recover, we got to believe that systems and providers and even communities and governments can recover as well.
What about mental health first aid, this idea of first responders and law enforcement?
Obviously a great idea, and Representative Victoria Steele introduced that over the past 2 years, and I think got funding both years, but really wanted to try to help out the Department of Education. That's something that NAMI's looking at as well, because I don't know that the teachers are adequately prepared in how to recognize an early intervention, and they can start breaking down the stigma at elementary school.
Well, in an ideal situation, how much training would need to be done for that, Jim?
You know, probably just one course, one block, you know. It doesn't take a whole lot, but it's an investment at least as worth any other three-credit course.
Essie, finally, are there any other advances that you've heard about, that you've experienced, that you think people need to know more about going forward that might erase the stigma or limit it a little bit more, so people realize that, you know, people they know might have this problem, or you yourself might at some point too?
One thing I wanted to jump in with in terms of kind of innovative social programs is a program up in Seattle that was organized by law enforcement and the mental health community that was kind of designed as a diversion system to get mentally ill people both off the street and out of the courts, so that when someone is in mental health crisis, the default isn't calling police and sending them to jail, but instead getting them to a crisis center where they're hooked up with social services, including connections to help them apply for health care and counseling and anything else that they might benefit from. And this system is kind of a great example of how institutional structures can support a non-stigmatized system, where the approach is much like if someone breaks their leg in the street, you know, nobody panics and calls the police and calls them a threat to public welfare and health. People call an ambulance because that's what the person needs. And so it's really exciting to see pilot programs like this spreading across the United States to get those first responders changing the way that they think about mental illness. And you also, of course, have stigma-fighting programs in the U.S. and the U.K. that involve people with mental illness openly speaking about mental health conditions and what it's like to live with this experience.
Essie Smith is social justice editor at exojane.com. Jim Dunn is executive director of Arizona's chapter of the National Alliance on Mental Illness. Thanks to you both. I appreciate it.
Thank you.